Welcome to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz family of companies. With an endless supply of energy, he deploys his experience and passion to unleash the potential in others and share the stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
All right. How do you do, Sacramento? This is the Haney Biz Project, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution. You know what, Marcus? 9 out of 10 small businesses fail in that first 5 years, and most never go on to unleash their full potential. But what if Sacramento's small businesses were the ones that figured out how to reverse that trend? What if Sacramento businesses didn't fail anymore? And what if the top half of those businesses figured out the secrets and found a way to unleash their full potential? Man, what would that do for our economy? What would that do for jobs? What would that do for Sacramento? And what would Sacramento then in turn give to the rest of the world? I mean, it would be game-changing, and we are on a mission to get that going right here in Sacramento. How you doing, Marcus?
I am fantastic.
You hanging or banging?
I'm banging. Every Saturday morning, I wake up banging. So
you know what?
We
got a big project ahead of us. This Haney Biz thing is no small deal. I mean, can we reverse this trend? Can we help businesses figure out a way to survive and ultimately thrive?
Yeah, no doubt. I think Sacramento has the perfect platform to do something just like that. The revolution has only just begun, but I think it starts with going all in, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I think as a town, we need to go all in at this thing.
Well, I mean, when you're either hanging or you're banging, there's times in life where we hang and we relax, and there's times when you give it everything you have, you're banging. And then when it's at your best opportunity, that's when the magic happens, and that's when new opportunities, they seem to surface. Now, you, Marcus, we talk about banging. Now, you were banging and sanging at one point, right? Now,
yes.
Tell us what does that mean? What's banging and sanging? Most people do not know about sanging.
Yes, Sangin Valley, Afghanistan is a place in the Helmand Province in Afghanistan that I spent some time
It's back not
in
a pretty place, is it?
No, you know, it isn't. And it's a place that is bittersweet, you know, one of those places, but we were always banging and singing.
Yeah, yeah,
and
you had to be banging.
Every day, you woke up banging, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah. And now you described it to me the other day as walking through, now it's my understanding that the Taliban has taken back over Sangin, where you were at one point hanging.
Yeah.
Or not hanging, banging.
Yeah, we were banging. Yeah, we were on a mission to help the Afghan National Army and Afghan National Police be more militant. And since then, 2012-13, the Taliban has taken back the entire region of Sangin Valley, where 80% of the world's heroin is growing.
Wow.
So it is a layman town for, you know, the Taliban to be harvesting everything.
So. You said it reminded you a little bit of Denials in a way. You walk through the towns and, you know, or not walk through, you're in your big armored vehicles and stuff, patrolling through the towns and stuff. And it kind of was like a festival. And now all that's gone.
Destroyed.
That is destroyed.
Absolutely destroyed, which is crazy because the rules of engagement that we had while we were in Afghanistan were next to nothing.
Yeah.
And you look at videos now, I had, you know, I got shot in Afghanistan. I had folks that Marines that didn't make it back from that place. And now to see it all destroyed kind of is a crazy, crazy thing for me.
And so many of those things are out of our control. But what is in our control is banging right here in Sacramento.
No doubt.
Banging with our businesses. I mean, there's so many people that are giving everything they have right now for our hometown, for hometown patriotism. You know, we all do what we can do. And we know a little bit about small business. We don't know everything, but we know a little bit. And to help us share in that information gathering effort that we have, we're bringing on some guys today that have been doing some banging in their own businesses. We're bringing on two guys from different backgrounds, from different industries, but these two guys share one thing in common, and that's the courage to build businesses that have real value, right? And really have the foresight to figure out a way to take those companies to a lucrative financial exit, which is not easy, as we know. Later in the show, we will meet Terry Joslin, who transformed the IT company Western Blue, taking it from about 5 employees to over 120 employees. But after the break, we will meet Mike Saldotti. Mike built a mortgage empire company, and it's called First Priority Financial. And after that successful exit, he is now a leader at national powerhouse mortgage company Caliber Home Loans. And in our third segment, we're going to talk to both these guys about the stories of exiting those companies so successfully, changing things for their stakeholders. And we're going to dive a little deeper into the mindset that goes into selling a company. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited. We'll be back in just a minute.
And now, back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with the Entrepreneurs Advocate, Mark Haney.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Haney Biz, family of companies, which include real estate, security, construction, accounting, marketing, IT, and basically whatever it takes to help you grow and protect your business. If we don't do it, trust me, I know a guy. And today I am here with a guy that I know. I am here with Mike Saldotti of Caliber Home Loans, and a man who has successfully built and merged his company with enormous success. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great this morning. Thanks.
I appreciate you coming out on a Saturday morning. Now, what would you be doing on Saturday morning if it wasn't hanging out with Mark Haney?
Oh, it's either working around the yard or some golf. And it's a beautiful day for golf.
Well, you are here. We're keeping you off of some yard work at least. Give us an overview of Caliber and what that is today.
So Caliber is located out of Dallas, Texas. Massive company. It's services $100 billion in servicing.
Wow.
It's helped over 25,000 families last year alone stay into their homes. And so it's a big national firm. It's something different than we had.
So you do refinance, you do new home purchases. Basically, a guy needs some money to buy a house or stay in his home. You got that covered.
We've got them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you from Jeff Eberhart, who is a good buddy of mine, a Loomis guy. And so he kind of coordinated this effort. And you know what? And he's helped some of my friends as well. And you guys do a heck of a job. But I want just to ask you about the state of the industry today real quick. Just so, is this a good time to refi? Is this the time to, I know it's a good time to buy a house.
Oh, it's a great time to buy a house. And you know, depending on what you're looking to do for refinance, are you looking to get some cash out to do some other things, consolidate your debt, bring your payments down? There's any number of things. So, yeah, it's a great time. It's always a great time.
All right. Well, so let's talk about building how you started and you built this empire, and then what happened.
Well, so way back in 95, we started kind of bringing on small brokerage outfits.
You were an independent at that time.
We were independent. We were strictly a brokerage. And some of the smaller brokers needed a place to kind of, you know, have somebody do the oversight and have somebody do the bigger picture so they could go out and do loans. And so we just started bringing them on and bringing them on. And one point we looked up and there was about 1,100 of them running around. Like, oh, what did we do?
Now, when you say bringing them on, was this just an alliance or did you actually acquire them or acquire a piece of them?
At that point in time, there was truly an alliance. It was, you know, we took care of the back end, the paperwork,
right?
You know, getting approvals and the relationships and all that.
Made it easy for them to work hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they could go out and do what they are good at. And I think, that's something that I think all of us long to do is we want to be at our very best. So, I mean, tell us about what happened as you grew those businesses, because that couldn't have been easy.
Well, yeah.
Was it easy?
No, it wasn't. No.
I thought maybe it was easy. No, I was like, well.
There's a lot of cycles in real estate. And as you know, we were there through the meltdowns in
08. Oh, man.
You know, all the ramp up in 03 to 06 where things just got crazy. Survived through the 08, kind of changed and morphed the company and the look to go along with the compliance that came with trying to right-side this industry again.
So scaling the business, though, before we ran into the financial crisis, you're scaling that company before 2008. What goes into, I mean, just as we're trying to help entrepreneurs and inspire them to take a risk and go chase their dreams. I mean, how did you know when it was time to put the gas to the to the accelerator a little bit.
Well, you know, with anything, you know, as entrepreneurs, we all think we have a better widget. That's why we do what we do, right? Because if we go down the street, we see somebody that's got a blueprint for a business, and it's like, hey, I would do this. I would add this. I would look at this market over here. And so that's really what we did. And we brought these companies in with, hey, this is a freedom branching. Do it your way. You know, stay on the right side of the rules. Treat your clients well. Treat your employees well. And we're going to work really well together. And so that's how it came to be. And so it was a great synergy as we continue to grow it.
So you found something that you guys did different in that back room, if you will, or in that support system. What was different about what you guys did?
So in the support system that we did from the back was really, we listened to the guys that we brought in. We didn't tell them, this is the formula. This is, you know, it's not like a franchise. This is the formula and you're going to go run with it. We let them come in with their ideas and do it their way that they wanted to do it, as long as we kept it in conformity.
So in doing that, what kinds of – so you ran into the financial crisis. What were the biggest challenges that you ran into at that time?
So the biggest challenges were, you know, as with anything, it's a pendulum, right? You have a pendulum of operations and sales, and anytime you're in the middle, you're doing well, right? So anytime your pendulum swings from all the way over to operations – sales
that
suffered.
Was a fast swing, too. That was like, I mean, a really lot of our friends, you know, they didn't make it out of that crisis.
Right.
You guys somehow found a way to succeed. So when you go from high flying to basically no loans getting done, I'm assuming.
Correct.
So how did you, what did that look like?
That was kind of interesting. My wife said, if you weren't doing what you were doing, what would you do? And I said, I have no other marketable skills, so we're going to take this all the way through.
I will not quit. You cannot stop me. I don't care if I don't let... Now, how long did you guys go through a period where you actually had zero loans? I mean, because you had a whole...
No.
Because there's always a little bit.
Yeah, no, we kept doing loans. And so really what fell out was you know, all of this stated income kind of stuff and the kind of the loosey-goosey stuff that was out there. For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
The biggest difficulty were, you know, the appreciation rose so fast, you know, under a false pretense.
Right.
And so when it fell, everything kind of fell with it. And so it was an interesting couple of years.
Yeah. It was, so there was some opportunity in there for some people that were jumping in and buying low, I suppose, as far as real estate investment. Now, what are you seeing now, though? I mean, you came out of it. Well, let me back up a little bit. You came out of it. Obviously, it wasn't easy. Your wife questioned whether you should stay with it. Any lessons that were learned throughout that process?
You know, I would say with anything, and it's true of all of our businesses, regardless of this crash here, which is always keep yourself in a position to have choices, right? So, you know, if you're making good money, put it away, right?
Yeah.
So invest, diversify yourself. So you're not in a situation that says, hey, I got to live up to this paycheck. Whatever my paycheck is, I got to live up to it. So now I have zero choices to make a move. And
keep your wife from spending too much money is what I'm hearing, Mike.
No, my wife's a seller. She's a saver, by the way.
Good.
She's the one that made it so we have money.
Well, let's talk about your family. Okay, I know you're a family guy. You were raised in a family with brothers. What shaped your earlier philosophies, and what's your family look like today?
So I have five brothers, no sisters. It's kind of interesting, and I'm still really close with all of them. There's four of us to play golf on a monthly basis. We can find another place.
Guys were all in sports. You guys were athletic.
We were all in sports. We were all in baseball. We gravitated towards the baseball. My father loved baseball, and he gave us that love of baseball. So it was really a lot about baseball. So we're all still close. We're all still in the Bay Area, and we get together. We talk to each other. I tell my folks it's really kind of odd. I mean, we really all get along, and it's great.
That's cool. That's cool. And having those early influences in sports, they shaped my life a lot. I was not the best athlete in the world, but, you know, we worked as hard as we could to get some playing time and hopefully achieve. And I think that helped me made me understand what trying hard means. Right. So
I agree with you. I think sports is so crucial. in so many areas. And if it's not sports, it's drama, it's theater, but it's something where you're doing as a team and as a group, and you're depending on other people and you're learning from other people, right?
And you grew up at Candlestick Park, and your favorite player was?
Willie Mays.
Gotta be Willie Mays. Why Willie?
Willie, you know, because he was so good at what he did. He was so confident in what he did. And quite frankly, made it look really easy, right? Yeah. We know it wasn't, but he just made it. You could see the love of the game.
He's my favorite player as well. I wish I could had time to share my story about my Willie Mays baseball that I got. But anyway, and I will share that at a later date. That's a little tease for a future show. I'm going to ask you to stick around, Mike. We're going to find out a little bit more. Obviously, you built this very successful business, and now it merged in with Caliber. And those merging and selling companies, that's something that a lot of people never get to in their life. We're going to ask you to stick around and share that story when we come back after the next segment. But when we return, we're going to have Terry Joslin. He built a very large IT consulting company, and he completed a successful exit of that enterprise. And we'll have a chance to kind of compare notes, see the differences. But let's get Mr. Joslin on here. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Haney Biz's Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to the Haney Biz Project. And this segment is presented by Haney Biz. We help businesses grow. And today I am joined by Terry Joslin. He's an angel investor today, but he's a man who grew the Western Blue IT consulting firm into a hugely successful liquidity event. I mean, Terry, welcome to our show. How you doing this morning?
Thank you. Good morning.
You ready to get it on right here at Haney Biz?
I am.
Okay, so I'm going to challenge you a little bit. You know, we have a number of mutual friends, Roger Akers, Lance Loveday. They wanted me to tell you hello. But I got a question for you. Who is Terry Joslin, the businessman?
Well, Terry Joslin, the businessman, is a real simple guy. I learned a long time ago some special principles as you surround yourself with people that are a lot smarter than you are.
Uh-huh.
And then you just keep rolling.
Now, you are a very smart guy. How do you find people smarter than you? How did that work?
Well, actually, it's not that hard. The bar's pretty low with
come
me.
Come on now.
But, you know, the other part is I've had some real special people in my life. Roger's one of them. James Coppert, another, that really were my mentors. They taught me how to do the things the right way. And, you know, once you do that, once you see the formula for being successful, I would say that almost anybody could do it.
Oh, I think that's inspiring, I think, for our listenership. It's inspiring for me. Now, what is the right way? You talk about, you know, there's some keys to how to win. Share a little bit of that with us.
Yeah, just a little bit. I used to travel all around the United States with Sharp Electronics, and I always knew I wanted to own a business. So I got to see businesses that were very successful in what they were doing and businesses that were always struggling.
Not so good.
Yeah, not so good. So obviously I took notes on the ones that were doing well, and it always seemed like, you know, they had a principle-centered kind of leadership, like the Covey principles, and they always followed those, and they hired really good people, and they compensated them and incented them very well, and they, you know, the other Covey principle that I love is, the pie always gets bigger and all boats rise.
Yeah.
You know? It's not scarcity.
If you guys start growing like you did at Western Blue, opportunity just starts showing up everywhere for
everybody.
Other people. Give us a sense as to how the Western Blue story occurred. How did you guys grow the company? Because you guys started with five employees when you first got in there?
Well, actually, Western Blue had kind of run its course. It got started in 83, and then former owner kind of wound it down. And I was traveling all around the United States, and I was about ready to get promoted to New Jersey, Mahwah, New Jersey. That scared the hell out of me. So I decided this is the time to buy a business. I knew nothing about IT. And so one of the principals of Western Blue, we were at a Monday night football game. He goes, well, I'll sell you my company. So I said,
wow.
Okay. And we just decided to put the deal together. James helped me put it together. And I didn't know anything about the business, and we just started from basically five people and, started learning the business and making calls. And
you said James helped you put it together. Who's James?
James Coppert is the guy that was probably one of my best friends and mentor to me throughout my whole career. So he was a guy that, you know, entrusted me when in the copier business where I started out. I almost failed multiple times, but because I'm too stubborn, he wouldn't let me fail.
He saw something in you.
Yeah, he saw something in me.
What would you say to James now? I mean, he put you into this business.
Well,
what
I'm going to say to James in about an hour is thank you, because he's going to invest his first angel investment that I know of, because I've been, helping him with the philosophy. He taught me how to give back, right? He said, you always give back. And now I live vicariously through my other employees that, I've hired, and also my children and everything else. And so, you know, I think it's a time for all of us to try to help the economy, help Sacramento, and grow this place, because it's a great place to be and live. And so I'm going to meet with Jim right after this, and he's going to invest in one of our angel companies. And
sweet.
Here we go.
All right. Now, I look forward to hearing a little bit more about that. Now, thinking about Western Blue, I mean, as business guys, a lot of times we start growing a company, and then there's, you know, good times and there's bad times. When did you know, hey, this is how to really push on the gas pedal, if you will, to really grow this thing? Because you guys had extremely fast growth and high growth. When did you know?
We did, but in 2001, there was a big downturn. There was we did a lot of our business with the state of California, and there was the Oracle scandal, 911, Enron. And so we were at 25 people, 25 million. And so our business went back by almost 40%. And so the inflection point to that was, do we lay off everybody or do we do it the HP way, mm-hmm. which was to try to keep people on board? So I went to everybody in the company and I said, hey, would you take a 10 or 15% pay cut? I cut my income by half. And we decided not to lay anybody off.
Wow.
The board of directors didn't want to do that. They wanted to hunker down and survive the storm. So it's funny, after a year, all the other big manufacturers, Cisco, Dell, HP, they had laid everybody off. So even if we were third on the list of a customer, when the phone started ringing a year later,
wow.
The business just hockey sticked up.
So, you know, that I can see why you're so appreciative to your teammates that decided to, along with yourself, take a big pay cut and weather the storm. Man, that's remarkable that everybody would agree to that.
Well, we offered to pay him back if we made any money. We made just enough money to pay him back.
Oh, that's a great story. So as you started growing the business, what did that mean in terms of opportunity? Because some people don't understand what that means when opportunity really starts happening for people.
When I bought the company, I thought, I'll never be the biggest company in town, because there's a big IT company doing $80 million. I won't mention their name because I hate them. So anyway, I thought, let's just be the best instead of the biggest.
Why don't you say something bad about them? I have insurance. I'm just kidding.
I would love to,
I'm just joking. So yeah, I mean, you didn't like your direct competitor? That's interesting news.
Well, I didn't like them after I got to know them.
I see. I know. Okay, so we talked about philosophies and winning and where they come from. Mike and I had some philosophies that came from playing on the athletics field, on sports, and our coaches and that kind of thing, and teamwork. Where did you learn your philosophies for how to win?
Well, I think some of it you're born with perseverance, and then the adrenaline rush of being able to win, and being a short guy and the worst guy on the baseball team,
Yes.
You just kind of get that inferiority complex, and mm-hmm. you say, gosh, if I can win against all these, great people, then it's just a huge rush. So, you get one win at a time, and I've always thought big. I thought, rather than go after a $100,000 contract, why not go after a $10 million contract?
Oh, nice.
And you lose them three or four times, and then you win. So perseverance, if you'd ask people, one of my strongest points is perseverance.
You will not be beat. He could be the worst guy on the baseball team, but you do not give up. Even if you get picked off first base, right?
Yeah.
We talked that story during Facebook Live. Now, just thinking about your story about your exit, a lot of people don't understand how you build something so valuable. We've talked about that a little bit, but when we come back, we're going to talk about actually how you sold your business, what goes into selling a business. We're going to ask Mr. Mike Saldati to come back on the show, and the three of us, we all have a little bit of experience in that realm. So we're going to talk about, you know, what it takes when you actually put companies together in a merger, how you might sell your company. It's not the easiest thing to do, or yep. I guess a lot of people would be doing it. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, broadcasting on Facebook Live, Sports 1140. We'll be back to share those stories in just a minute.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Haney Biz investorpreneur Mark Haney.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Haney Biz. We help businesses grow. I am Mark Haney, and today I am joined by both Terry Joslin and Mike Saldati. These two guys have successfully built and exited significant size businesses. Now, Mike, you kind of merged yours. Tell us about your transaction. How did you put that together?
So that was kind of an interesting journey in that we weren't actually looking to sell initially. We were looking to buy some smaller entities. And as we started to go through that, we started to think, how would we look on the other side of this? So we asked the question, and they kind of go through a process of evaluating the company, and then under a assumed name, they shop it out to a bunch of companies.
Okay.
And then from there, you go into speed dating, make sure that you've got synergy there to be able to take your company into theirs or theirs into yours. And
so let me see if I can clarify that. I want to demystify this for our audience. So you hired an investment banker? Is that what you hired?
A broker. It's a broker,
if you will. And he looked at the state of the industry and your company specifically and how you might acquire, he helped convince you that maybe you got to take a look at it from the other side.
Yeah, you know, as you start to, you know, all of us in our businesses, we put our head down and we start going. And we don't always look up to see what else is out there. And once you start to look up, you go, wow, there's a whole bunch of stuff out here that I don't have that maybe would be really cool to have.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so I'm gonna contrast that with a man that built an IT company. Yours is a mortgage company. What about Terry Joslin's story? How did you decide to sell your company, and what went into those thoughts? What happened?
Well, it was kind of a process. My board of directors and board of advisors had always kind of kept us on track to have, you know, begin with the end in mind and have a succession right. plan and all those kinds of good things. And, you know, when preparation meets opportunity, that's when that stuff starts to happen. So, you know, we'd done very, very well. We were peaking. And we were looking at the industry and saying, okay, we're fairly narrowly niched. Okay. How do we expand? And so my partner brought in another company in tow that was completely different to ours. And we started discussing it, and the cultures were good. And we decided that it would make sense both for our employees' career, my career, and everybody else, that this would be a good thing. So it was an all-out sale, but it was also a merger, too, because I kept stock in the new company.
Okay.
But it helped us grow. And
did you stay on with the new company?
I did.
How long did you stay on for?
Well, I'm still there. It's been almost 7 years.
Wow. Okay. Now, that's not full-time for you, though, staying there.
No.
You're now there in more of an advisory capacity and
exactly.
helping the transition
exactly.
still. Okay. Interesting. Now, how about you, Mike? How would you contrast that with what you're doing? I mean, you merged as well in a way. How does that look from your end? You stayed with the company.
Yeah. So, you know, as I said, you know, you look up, you see, you know, a lot more cookies in the jar, so to speak, right? And so our most important thing was to be able to take our guys and give them more, right? So give them more bells and whistles and more products and all that. And so, yes, I did stay on and continue to stay on. I'm managing basically the region that I brought them in a little bit different capacity. I'm doing a lot more with our people in developing them rather than doing a lot of the, you know, the IT stuff on the outside and the meetings and all that stuff. All that stuff's off my plate. So,
well, let's talk about, you said you kind of put it through a process, and that's a term we use as we decide to sell the company, put it through a process. Mike, what did that process look like? Was that an auction of sorts where you brought in multiple buyers to bid on your company?
Yeah, so once again, they put it out under an assumed name. There was 9 lenders that immediately wanted to come play. So from there, you basically get on the phone and make sure that you guys can play in each other's sandbox, right? Your philosophies were the same, and that you're not trying to change something drastically in there. And then from there, we go running around the country to see different lenders and all. I think I was the only guy in Boston on St. Patty's Day not drinking. We flew in, flew out, and that was it.
So negotiating a price and negotiating all those terms, it can be a stressful time because one valuation might mean something more. The whole thing is life-changing, but one number might be extremely life-changing. The other one might be moderately life-changing. How did you guys negotiate this life-changing price?
So, you know, once again, it's a value, and it's a value on the production and all. But at the end of the day, we took Caliber was not the highest bidder, but they brought the most to our folks for longevity.
Wow.
And to get the
about
most
the
for
people.
Them. Absolutely.
Terry's nodding his head. Yeah. Well, how about you, Terry? How
it was
did that
exactly
happen?
The same thing. We didn't sell just for the dollar.
Right.
We wanted to make sure that once you build a company, it's part of your family.
Yeah.
And you want your family to do well. And so we wanted to hand this thing off to somebody that could really take care of it. And we did a good job in making sure that that happened. It's been really terrific, really frustrating for, you know, going from a CEO to, consultant or helper. But, you know, it was good for everybody involved, done for the right reasons.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting to hear because so often in a merger or a roll-up strategy, there's layoffs and cutbacks, and especially when you are a standalone company, you have support teams and so on that maybe aren't there. It's redundant in a larger organization. You were able to keep all your employees, or Terry?
Almost all the employees. Matter of fact, after 7 years, there's the core management group is still there, with the exception of one person.
That's great. And how about you, Mike?
Well, we had more redundant positions between corporate and all. So some of them we moved into other positions. Some of them we helped find jobs outside of the company.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you talk about your life work, you know, the misconception is everybody works to make the big bucks and, you know, rolls out of town. If you built companies you love, it doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
It's still yours. It's still your baby.
Exactly.
So now that it's completed, I'll ask this both of you guys. Mike, may start with you. How has your life changed? You've stayed with the company, but has life changed for Mike Saldotti?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the stress that comes with an ownership, some of that's off of there. It's replaced with other stress. I mean, you don't get to become stress-free.
What's the new stress?
The new stress is recruiting and getting to understand a new culture and bringing that in and how it complements.
So it's that integration between
the
companies. Yeah.
Absolutely.
How would you contrast that, Terry?
Mike,
you guys are, I think, sharing this lot of feelings here.
There's light at the end of the tunnel, Mike, because I am absolutely stress-free. I tried to stay home full-time, and I love my
Your
wife
didn't
much.
Like that, or you didn't like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, I love my wife too much to stay home full-time, because that's her house, not my house. And so I get out and do things because
awesome.
I love to stay busy. I love to help other people, and she loves me to help other people.
So you have a lot of freedom. Okay, so what does that freedom look like in real terms? What's that freedom look like to the rest of us that are like, wow, that sounds kind of cool? Being at home with the wife is always fun. But when you're not doing that, what are you doing?
Well, I love to get involved with high-tech startups and be a part of the strategy. And, vacation, travel, and do those kinds of things. But, I just have a passion for it. I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I love to live vicariously through the people that I can maybe be able to help a little bit.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's what happens to me because, I lost a little bit of my identity by selling that company.
Yeah.
Because
yep.
I put everything into it. And, the family sacrifices, all of that, it's just too important to...
Yeah, no question. You're helping the next guy in line. I think that's a lot of what this show and what our efforts here is coming on. You guys are you're coming down here on a Saturday morning. We're trying to help that next guy in line. Now, Mike, just looking over to you, your exit was more recent, and what's it look like short and long term for you? What do you see some freedom coming at some point?
Yeah.
What do you look at?
You know, there is a little bit more freedom in there. I'm out of the office more. I'm on the road with my people. I find my role changing more into what you were talking about, which is, you know, really helping develop these guys now, right? I've already developed my company. I've sold my company. And so now I really get to focus on just developing them and helping them get to their next step.
And thinking about, okay, so some of the businesses that come on the show that are listening, some of our listeners are really at the beginning stages, and others are more advanced companies, medium-sized type companies that probably wonder what it's like to sell a company and exit. Just maybe closing thoughts from each of you guys on, or maybe some advice. What should somebody who ultimately they're not going to hand the business down to the kids, they're going to need to sell it. What closing thoughts, advice?
There's a huge due diligence process where they look at everything. So my advice is run your company like everybody was going to look at, completely transparent. They're going to look at every single thing you do and question it, and you're going to feel like sometimes that you're a crook by some of the things you've done, you know, on your books and things like that. But you're not. It's just they look and question everything, and they put a staff of people on it. And they go through everything.
Go online, get a due diligence checklist, a very exhaustive one. Look at it and compare notes. And I think any medium-sized company or the most of them will find plenty of things to work on in terms of projects to get their businesses ready to sell years in advance before the opportunities start showing up. How about you, Mike? Any closing thoughts?
Same thing. And the due diligence process is enough that at one point I'm like, okay, I'm done.
It's worse than a colonoscopy, right?
It really is. But you know, it's needed, and it actually gives you a great oversight on what you've done and maybe how you would have done it differently. It's an exhausting process. Exhausting.
So preparation. I think I heard that term earlier, and you know what? If you are ready, then when the opportunities start coming up, and they will if you've been banging hard. You know, if you've been winning, the opportunities will start surfacing. And I want to thank you guys for coming on the show today, sharing your thoughts, your information, which is quite uncommon because most small businesses really don't make it, and even the ones that make it, they never get to the point where you guys have taken your ventures. So thanks for sharing that today. I want to thank my sponsors that make this show possible. Five Star Bank, Stifel Financial, my buddies over at Sun Systems Technologies. Thanks for coming on the show. Also, a little shout out to my partners, Haney Garcia Realty Group. I got some new partners in our Folsom effort of expansion, and that is Erica and Cassandra. They're launching Haney Garcia Folsom here pretty soon. It's going to be out at the Palladio. And you know what? You mentioned it earlier, surround yourself with great people. I could not agree more. And I want to thank you guys. I also want to give a little shout out for next week's show. Rachel and Catherine Bartis of Bartis Homes will be coming on the show. And when I return, we'll have some closing thoughts. Marcus and I will have our takeaways from what you guys have helped us understand today. And I'll have some closing thoughts about why businesses really never reach their full potential. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney.
You know, what an impact Terry Joslin and Mike Saldati had on their family and on their friends and on their community. These success stories, they're not very common, but they happen. And they ought to happen more often. I mean, I think to myself, as I hear their stories, I think, why not us? Why not you? Why? I mean, it doesn't have to be that 9 out of 10 small businesses go out of business in the first 5 years. I mean, can you imagine, Marcus, the opportunity that would be created if that number was cut in half? Let's say it was half of them went out of business. I mean, what would happen if we had twice as many company scale as what Mike and Terry built in their businesses, or three times or four times and five times? There's not very many of these things that happen. What if that happened, you know, five times more often right here in Sacramento? I mean, that's what the entrepreneurial revolution is all about. Those stories are not impossible. They're not easy, but it can happen.
No doubt. If that happened right here in Sacramento, I think we'd have to get more housing, right? We'd have a bunch more employees. We'd have economic growth would be exponential. And, hey, may even get the King Stadium full, the Golden One Center over there.
Oh, no doubt. Well, it's we're going to need to put together the right program out there on the court. No question. But, you know, Marcus, you're building a business. You're starting to get some growth. I mean, what's that look like for you? Is it scary? Is it fun? What's the emotion that goes through a startup like yourself?
You know, it's fun. I'm actually having a blast. I've seen you grow businesses and other folks around us grow it to different points up till sell. And right now, I'm in the grind mode. I'm putting my head down. I'm banging every day, putting my head to the grindstone and getting out there and turning over every rock, trying to find opportunities. And, you know, the scalability is like, okay, hey, here we go.
These guys are motivational when you hear these guys. Huh? Any takeaways?
I really like the way that they both talked about taking care of their family, as they like to call it, as their employees. It's really important to me, and I know it's important to the Haney Biz group of companies and ourselves, so I really like to hear that they wanted to
think about
their folks that brought them to where they are. They didn't do it alone, and that's for sure.
Yeah, no question. You know, we talk about, are you hanging, are you banging, and I've come up with the... I know this. I come up with a theory, but the more often that you're banging, right? I think that the reason why more businesses don't succeed is because they're not banging enough, right? They're just not at their very best. You know, the business owner, the team lead, he's not or she is not at their very best often enough. So, because if they were banging more often at their very best opportunities, man, that's when the magic happens. And I just think to myself, why? Why don't they bang more? And last week we talked about this, and we, you know, I shared with our audience that I really think there's three reasons why entrepreneurs don't bang more, right? And number one, they chose to do things that's not fun. They lack the passion. They've chosen to put themselves on a spot on the team that's not best for them. Or maybe they're trying to do everything and they're great at product or they're great at sales or they're great at accounting, but nobody's good at all three. And they're not banging when you're working on the stuff you're not good at. So I think that's the number one reason. And I think that's where it all starts is we've chosen to do things that we're not passionate about, that we're not good at, we're not gifted at. But the second one, I'm going to reveal that today, Marcus.
I'm fired up. Tell us about it.
I'm going to reveal the second reason why people are not banging right here in Sacramento. And I'm telling you, I think it's they don't have the courage of conviction, right? They don't have the ability to really commit, the courage to really commit to what they know to be true. I mean, there are things in life that we know to be true. And so often we get caught up in I'm not sure or
fear.
Because fear. And there, of course, there's things that we don't know. Of course that exists. But there are things that we do know. And when you have the courage of conviction on those things, when you can go all in on what you know, that's when the magic happens. But when you don't go all in, when you are not at your very best, at your very best opportunity, then you're not banging. And I think so often we get confused by all the different signals that are out there and all the noise, and we need to simplify that and say, what am I good at? What do I love? And what do I know? What do I know to be true? And I think those are when the games have really changed for me. I'll tell you the story about my business. And when we started scaling it, we had got to about $30 million in sales. My brother and I had got into coaching our competitive sports, and we were hanging a little bit at business, right? We had made enough mistakes. I made enough mistakes probably for all of us, but we had got to the point where we had survived the mistakes, and we're hanging. We're doing $30 million in sales, highly profitable. Got the toys. And we got kind of slapped in the face, and that slap in the face came, as we're winding down a little bit of our coaching career, and somebody, said they wanted to buy us, and they're like, yeah, we're either going to buy you or we're coming into that industry and, chances are we're going to put you out of business. And we're like, whoa, what do they know that I don't know? And they described their plan, and my brother and I said to ourselves, oh, we can do that. We are kind of doing that. And we, they basically affirmed what we already knew, and that there was this big Goliath in our industry, Honeywell. Can't mention that name. They were the big Goliath in our industry, and there was a lot of small independents. And we took the fact that Honeywell, the Goliath, actually had some weaknesses. We knew those weaknesses. We had had our 10,000 hours plus in that business. We knew those weaknesses. And you know what? We knew how to exploit those weaknesses. So we took that game plan, that slap in the face by the threat of the guy that was suggesting he might buy us or put us out of business. And we took that as confidence. It's like, we know how to do this. In fact, we have a special twist because we know a heck of a lot more than you do, Mr. Potential Buyer. We're going to put our twist to this opportunity, and we're going after Goliath. And we did, and that's the story of how we went from 30 to over 200 million in about 5 or 6 years. And ultimately, we did sell, but it's because we had the confidence to go all in. We got the $30 million line of credit, and we just started opening up offices. And instead of opening up offices geographically around the country, we focused on the video side of things and became the number one video security distributor in the country with offices all over the country, but yet inside our consolidated, centralized business model. We just had phones and computers and people in a big call center, if you will. So we took that approach and put our little Haney twist on it, focused on what we knew, and we went all in on what we knew. And that was game-changing, my friends, because we weren't held back anymore. We went all in on what we knew. And I try to translate that to anybody who may be looking for a job right now, anybody who might be at that very beginning stage, is just getting out of college, or maybe they're not satisfied with where they're at. And I think to my friend over at Riznos, one of my business partners over at Riznos, Mr. Matt Ross, and his story is incredible. I think it's... It was prompted by, we did a job fair, and we had some girl jump out at the job fair and help us put together, Caroline Gaines from our office, put together, tear down our booth and all that. And it really stood out. It was remarkable, right? She went all in on trying to do a good job at the job fair. Well, Matt, my business partner at Riznos, he did something remarkable in trying to get a job as an investment banker. He got the job as an investment banker by writing a cover letter that got recognized by CNN and all kinds of media around the country. And in his cover letter, he said things like, "I will come over and buy you donuts."
Fetching coffee, shining shoes, right?
All that stuff really surprised the entire world just to get an investment banking job. He landed the job. He became an investment banker. He's now my partner at Riznos along with Jeff Rizzo. You know what? You got to be remarkable. You got to go all in on what you know. And you got to go all in at some point in your life if you want to create something unique. That's what we're doing in Sacramento. Never above you. Never below you.
Always by your side.